Hi, everybody. It's Brian Greene from the Commercial Break Podcast. It's likely you've heard of the show if you're directly related to me or you follow our MySpace page. But I'm not here to talk to those three listeners. I'm here to appeal to people who haven't heard the show. Along with my co-host, Kristen Joy Hoadley, we're taking a deeper look at the topics that are affecting our youth today. Like, who are the people who are dating ghosts? Where did all these pickup artists come from? And why doesn't my preacher have a nicer private jet? We understand that these are the issues you really want to get to the bottom of. The Commercial Break is now available on the Odyssey app or wherever you find your podcasts.
Welcome back, Big Bad Morning Show, hour number three. Ken McCusick's in studio, Film Study Baltimore. Ken, what's up, man? How are you?
Life's good. How about you, Jeremy?
I'm doing well, and I guess we can start this off looking at some of the players here. I was reading some stuff on Rashad Bateman. I heard the rumors about the potential trade that could have happened with the Cowboys. What did you see from Bateman last year? Do you think we have an upper echelon receiver in Bateman? That, I mean, they got him at a mint because of what happened. Mm-hmm. If he continues this, and yeah, you're in a great spot. But how do you feel he fits with the Ravens?
Yeah, he's a terrific X receiver, makes really good use of the space budget on that side of the field, which is one of the things. You want a good route runner in your X receiver, a guy who's slow to get going and doesn't lose a cornerback at the top of the stem is typically not the guy you want on that side of the field. Bateman had a breakout year last year. 10.5 yards per target was the record ever for a Ravens wide receiver. I think that went under the radar a little bit. And the 12.5% touchdowns, as a percentage of targets, that is, also a new record for Ravens wide receiver. 132.2 passer rating throwing to him. That had been a problem in the past because he's had some interceptions come off his hands and whatnot. But you know, in terms of the value of Rashad Bateman, there isn't another second contract wide receiver in the NFL that I can think of who's at a better price than Rashad Bateman right now. He literally has one of the highest values of any second contract wide receiver in the NFL.
I think what we're going to do is do what we should do.
What?
Go offense, defense.
Okay, I'll take all the offense.
You're an offensive player. I'm a defensive player. What about Kyle Hamilton? I mean, outside Lamar Jackson, he may be the most important guy on the team.
He's critical. He keeps that, holds that defense together like Roquan Smith does, quarterbacks the secondary. And yet we hope that this is a year where he can get back to dominating the strong side of the field, being that horizontal defender that was so effective for the Ravens when he was a first team All-Pro in 23. You know, he saved the defense in a lot of ways, him and Ardarius Washington, by moving to the back end. But it's probably not the most effective position for him. The Ravens have some decisions to make on how they're going to get things done. But they're sitting right now at effectively a -2 at guys who can play the back end as safeties. You know, they lost Ardarius Washington, and they were already at -1.
Yeah.
And so they've got to go out and get somebody. They'll probably get a veteran. I hope that they find more than a Band-Aid solution for this. They really need a multi-year solution. Even when Ardarius comes back, they're going to want a guy who can be 3 or 4 years in this role. And that means you take somebody else's cast off that you really liked from the draft, one of the last 2 years, and you bring them in here and you mold them into the safety you want them to be.
Well, Starks hopefully has something, but I don't think people realize, maybe locally we do, people that are in, do this every day like yourself, but Washington's a huge blow to this team.
Enormous.
I mean, it's so much bigger than a guy that was, not drafted or, somebody really unknown. He's 5'7", whatever he is. Nobody ever took him serious.
Played so great last year.
I mean, he's a big loss that I don't think people are talking about naturally. They don't get it. Like, if this was, Tyrann Mathieu who happened to go out or something, somebody like that, an undersized safety, but with a big name, it'd be a national story.
Yeah,
he's not getting that kind of press.
No, he's one of the most versatile defenders in the NFL. Slot corner, free safety, can play strong as well. He's just a guy the Ravens were really depending on, and it's a personal tragedy for him. You kind of want to not look at the damage in your own car before you ask if anyone else in the other car was hurt, kind of thing. But we really got to look at this from Ardarius's perspective. This is a huge loss for him. He's at a crossroads in terms of making some real money in the NFL. He could have maybe signed a 3-year deal with the Ravens or somebody else, and this is now going to probably put the kibosh on that for 2026 even. And he'll likely be on a 1-year deal somewhere, hopefully here. But he's a very important player.
Ken, let's talk about Isaiah Likely. What do you think happens this year? And is he a candidate for, at the end of the season, for a franchise tag, a transition tag, something, if they don't get something done during the regular season? Is it something where you're willing to wait to the end? I don't need to get in contracts with you, but the player specifically, because this is a guy moving forward that I think you absolutely has to have.
critical player. And the Ravens have some very difficult choices they're now coming up on. They signed Derrick Henry, so that's some of their budget gone additionally in terms of who they have. And they have the, you know, four or five cornerstone guys they're still sitting on here with Adafi Owe, Travis Jones, Isaiah Likely, Ardarius Washington, Daniel Faalele even are guys they could possibly have gotten cheap this offseason in terms of bringing back and taking some risk off the table. They're now in, it's going to make it more difficult for them to sign those guys. Travis Jones in particular is a guy I think they have to have. But Isaiah Likely is a potential franchise tag. He's the price is right at tight end, generally speaking. And the Ravens need to find a way to unstack those four contracts between Ricard and the three tight ends.
What about inside linebacker now? This is how Washington's really affected things. I think when Washington was out, when he was healthy, that the drafting of Starks and Hamilton being there and him, you could see more, you know, dime sets. You wouldn't need an inside linebacker so often because Hamilton's so good against the run. How much has this changed now? Because inside linebacker, man, Trent Simpson has not lived up to what I thought he would be yet. Obviously, Roquan's great, but he's one linebacker. Like, does this change the impact it has on, like, inside linebackers?
Absolutely. I mean, it impacts depth at multiple positions. At slot corner, it impacts depth because he was at big nickel. He was potentially a big part of your package. It impacts depth at safety because you can only have him face, but, you know, plug one hole. That's probably going to be there to start. It impacts depth at inside linebacker for exactly the reasons you mentioned. Is the Ravens have done very well in past years having a platoon system where they play a dime and even sometimes have two guys. I don't know if people remember this, but McClain used to play first down and Ellerby used to play second and long kind of situations. Mm-hmm. And then they'd bring in a dime on third down. They've handled that position very well with platoons and very inexpensively in the past. And so, you know, you can afford to have a high-budget Mike linebacker if you're doing that on the Will side. And I really hope the Ravens can find a way to do it anyway. Both Kane and Braid, by the way, are potential dimebacks, whereas I think they have less chance to succeed on the back end. So that's possibly they'll solve it that way.
All right, I didn't hear you. I'm going to go to the dark side real quick, so forgive me, Ed. I didn't hear you bring up TJ Tampa. Is he a guy that can kind of replace what Ardarius did? Do you see him in another role? What are your thoughts?
Well, he's an interesting player because he's a corner who probably dropped in the draft because of his speed. He was my number six overall corner in that draft. Wiggins was number one. And Tampa, they drafted in the fourth round. I think the Costa quote was something like, it would be like a professional malpractice or something not to draft him by then when he's fallen so far kind of thing. He's a guy with, you know, back end ball skills that could make sense in terms of a move to safety. Of course, now you're weakening another position to fix that hole, and you're it's not like your cornerback depth is so great, but they do have some fight for roster spots at the bottom. Like there's a big fight for the number five cornerback spot between Longer Beam, Kone, and JAD. Probably only one of those three guys makes the team, would be my guess. But if you reassign Tampa to be a safety, if that's where he starts camp at, then maybe you got room for two of those guys.
And, you know, like we were kind of talking about it too. Just looking at the way that this team is assembled and what they're going to do on the defensive side of the ball and moving the guys around with the loss of Washington and how things look. But they also signed. Didn't they sign a defensive tackle?
Yeah,
he's like 40 some years old. No, he's been around for a while. Yeah. But yeah, I mean, there's some depth there now because that was the piece we were waiting for after maybe the June 1st cuts and what happens coming up soon.
Okay, so some strange things happened at nose tackle, and John Jenkins is the guy they signed, and he is 36 years old or will be in July, I think. So he's a guy who brings a lot of size to the defensive line. He's actually in the last two seasons he had his two highest career snap totals, but he's also done like nine tours of duty with seven teams. So he's been around. But this last couple of years in Las Vegas, he played a lot of snaps. And I think the Ravens are saying some of the drop-off in his play they can probably mitigate and make him a little bit better player in fewer snaps because he's certainly not going to take that many with 600 snaps basically each of the last 2 years with Travis Jones around.
Can I ask you, this is an off question, not what we've been talking about, but there was something that was put out on X the other day. And it talked about guys made the most of every target in the regular season. It was the highest passer rating when targeted in 2024. Mm-hmm. Minimum 60 targets. There was nine guys, you know, just listed on the tweet. It was Chris Godwin was nine. Rashad Bateman was eight. Mm-hmm. Ryan Murphy, Amon-Ra St. Brown, and so on. So McLaurin, Kittle, Reed. Number one was Mark Andrews.
Well, the Ravens tight ends, the last two seasons combined, 143.5 passer rating throwing to them. And that includes 30 touchdowns and one interception. It's an incredible run of things. But Derrick Henry has came in and basically stabilized what I thought was a completely unstable level of performance from 2023. And they basically did just as well in 24. And remarkable group. I mean, just remarkable group. And that's why it's so scary to me that the contracts are all stacked up and they're at risk of losing every single one of them this next year. I guess it shouldn't surprise anyone that a bunch of Lamar Jackson's receivers are at the top of the passer rating list when he had one of the greatest passer ratings of all time. It's still remarkable that all the tight ends as a group have been so effective.
That was good for second in the MVP vote, right? Oh, sorry. So, Ken, I know you got a lot coming up. Schedule, release, talk, that you're going to break that down. What else you got coming up on Film Study Baltimore?
Well, these are snippets we just gave you from this thing of the expectation series, where you go over one offensive, one defensive player per show, usually one per day during the week anyway. And those are coming out over the next 2 months. They'll basically be the precursor to camp. And it's one of the series we really love doing. It gets a lot of critical review, at least from the audience. And it'll be what we're primarily doing. But I did want to plug one other thing.
Yeah.
Talking to Jeremy Lucien, who's an ex-safety for the Ravens from camp a year ago. So actually with 23, not 24. He's been having some trouble finding his next job, but he finally got it with the Calgary Stampeders. Just played his first exhibition game yesterday and recovered an onside kick. And I'm thinking, a half-field safety who can play special teams, you know?
Yeah.
Can we think of anybody who would need that? But anyway, he's going to be on the show tonight, and we've been kind of following his career in terms of the middle-class nature of being on the fringe of the NFL. So it's been kind of a cool story.
That's good stuff, man. FilmStudyBaltimore.com. Check it out. Ken, as always, we appreciate it. We'll talk to you next week.
Take it easy.
All right, we've got a lot to get into. We're going to talk some NBA next. Ed, you got to be excited about this. We really haven't dove into the Knicks and Pacers. They play tomorrow night. He's got his Knicks hat. He's all ready to go. But tonight it's Thunder and Wolves. So we'll get into that a little bit, talk about the two series, what we think is going to happen, and we'll take your phone calls at 410-583-1055.
Hi, everybody. It's Brian Greene from the Commercial Break Podcast. It's likely you've heard of the show if you're directly related to me or you follow our MySpace page. But I'm not here to talk to those three listeners. I'm here to appeal to people who haven't heard the show. Along with my co-host, Kristen Joy Hoadley, we're taking a deeper look at the topics that are affecting our youth today. Like, who are the people who are dating ghosts? Where did all these pickup artists come from? And why doesn't my preacher have a nicer private jet? We understand that these are the issues you really want to get to the bottom of. The Commercial Break is now available on the Odyssey app or wherever you find your podcasts.
5-7. All right, here we go. Some NBA talk. Big Bad Morning Show. Jeremy Kahn, Ed Norris, Rob Long is off this week. We've got the Knicks and the Pacers. I don't know if you saw it. That's tomorrow night, Ed. Tyrese Halliburton did that Pacers fan a solid that they were just throwing trash at. That was an ugly scene. I don't think that defines every Knicks fan or New York. Maybe if it was in Philly, it would define everyone, but no, I'm kidding. But like seeing that, it's disgusting. It's one of the reasons.
It seems like it happens at every venue in the country now to some degree.
Yeah. Like you can't be a fan. Like
it's this.
I don't know what the guy did beforehand. Cause clearly his team lost. Right. When this happened, clearly his team lost. But the fact of the matter is to go out and throw trash at they were picking up gigantic trash bags and throwing on top of the guy. And if you've never been surrounded by 40 people chanting something at you that's not positive, it's not a comfortable situation to be in.
No, of course not.
So Halliburton hooked him up with playoff tickets to the games. So I think that's kind of cool for the stupid crap he had to deal with. But
it's pretty cool, actually.
The other cool part of this, I'm not a wrestling fan anymore, but Tyrese Halliburton and Jalen Brunson did something at WrestleMania, and now here they are facing off in the Eastern Conference Finals, which is kind of cool. So, as I look at it, I love the nostalgia of the series. I do think the Knicks are the better team. I think the Knicks advance. I don't think it's going to be easy, though. The more and more I look at it, the Pacers have been playing really good basketball, and nobody's been paying attention because you knocked off the Celtics, and everybody thought they were going to be the best team, right? The Cavs, nobody's giving the Pacers any credit at all because the Cavaliers went out with a whimper, and they were injured. Everybody got hurt. The whole store got the flu. You know, everybody got hurt. So I think people are just down on them. Maybe they're just excited about the Knicks. I, for one, would not be, I'm not saying this to have, would not be shocked if the Pacers won the series, but I fully believe the Knicks will. They're the better team.
How do they match up?
So it's interesting. The Knicks match up by playing their starting five all 48 minutes in the
every game.
I think you have some advantages. This is weird. I can't believe it's not weird to say, but I'd love both of the point guards. I'd take Jalen Brunson over Tyrese Halliburton. Mm-hmm. He impacts the game more. Halliburton disappears in some spots at times. I think the Pacers are deeper. So if there's foul trouble, injuries, I think they can weather that storm a little bit more than the Knicks. But from a starting five standpoint, you have former teammate OG Anunoby to put on Pascal Siakam. Like, OG, good night. Thanks for coming out. Mm-hmm. I'm not saying Pascal's not going to score or do anything.
Right.
He will wear his ass out. And that's the whole point of it. Like, when you have a player that can play defense the way that some of the Knicks players can, you throw him on somebody. Same thing with Lu Dort. Go get in the Dortcher chamber. And I'm sure Anthony Edwards is going to be in it the whole damn week. And we'll get to that game in a second. But, you know, and then you start thinking about the other pieces. Mikal Bridges, at the beginning of the season, everybody's saying he can't shoot. He changed his shooting motion. Now he's back to hitting shots and playing 40 minutes. He was a plus defender, even though he didn't grade out well this year. And then you bring in Josh Hart, who people can say whatever they want. That guy can play on my team any day of the week because he does everything. He doesn't care if he grabs 18 rebounds and 4 assists and doesn't score, or if he's the guy that drops 38 points and doesn't have another. I mean, he'd probably be mad if he didn't have any other statistical categories, but he just fills up the stat sheet across the board. And when you have glue players like him and OG Anunoby, it'll let you to do whatever you want because they can defend. OG can defend 1 through 5. I think you might be comfortable with Hart 1 through 4, depending on how big the power forward is. But you get what I'm saying.
Yeah.
Versatility helps. So, yeah. And then the big thing is Miles Turner versus Cat. I think this is Cat's series. I think it's like, hey, really? This is why you guys got me. And I think this is the one where he shows his worth. Because, like, I've seen a lot out of him this year. I really like. I was so down on Cat because I thought he was soft. And I still think he's a little soft for a big guy. But, man, that guy's been through hell and back with the stuff that went on with his mom and people mocking him and Minnesota, the stuff that went on with Jimmy Butler where it felt like he cut his freaking nuts off and, you know, like he couldn't do anything there. Even when he spoke up, Jimmy was like, oh, you're soft. Get out of here. And everybody felt that way. And now seeing him in New York, he made the statement, I'm the greatest shooting big man of all time, which everybody took umbrage with. They're like, oh, you forgot about Dirk Nowitzki. Well, Dirk Nowitzki was a power forward. Yes, that's a big man that shoots. This is a center. This is a center that shoots more threes than most of the guys in the league, and he's good at it. So I just think it's going to be a lot of fun. That starts tomorrow night. Tonight, well, first off, let me get your thoughts. What do you think? Knicks and Pacers. You nervous?
Yes, because I think the Knicks is a better team. I always believed in them, as you know, during even against the Celtics. I remember you telling me early in the season they were a good matchup with the Celtics, who were the defending champs, by the way. So it's not like they've, you know. But everybody, and we tease Rashawn, but I mean, so many people, even nationally, were like, the Knicks have no business being on the floor with them. The Celtics, I don't care. The Celtics aren't going to lose this series. All that. The Knicks are a good basketball team. It's just they've been not very good for a long time. Now they are. Brunson he's a huge difference maker. We had an off-air conversation yesterday. He may end up being, if he continues, he'll be one of the greatest Knicks of all time, if not the best.
He's got more Knicks playoff wins than anybody in the past, 40 years?
Yeah. So, I mean, there's all that. I think they're better than the Pacers. I don't know if they could beat the Thunder if they get to the NBA Finals. But this is a good basketball team, and I think they should get through this series. I think they will get through this series, but I don't think it's going to be easy. It's not going to be like they're going to sweep them.
Yeah. Well, look, this is it's going to be interesting tomorrow night, and again, we'll talk about that tomorrow, but tonight. And I'll talk more about this in the Daily Line just because I really like this game. Thunder versus the Wolves. Thunder about a 7.5-point favorite. I think tomorrow night the Knicks are 5, 5.5, somewhere in there. Mm-hmm. And I like both the Knicks in game one. I like the Thunder in game one. I'm not usually on all the favorites, but like everybody's jumping on the underdog because they think the spreads are too large. And I look at the situation tonight. Again, you're going to have, I believe you see Lu Dort on Anthony Edwards, and you start to look at the other pieces. Isaiah Hartenstein, not a good defender. Rudy Gobert, not a good offensive player, so I don't know how much that really matters. And then on the flip side, you start looking at the other pieces. Jalen Williams, Chet Holmgren, what they add. I don't know that that this team with the Wolves, because I think you're going to see a lot of Naz Reid. I think you're going to see a lot of, God, I just blanked on their wing player that's so good that D's up everybody. It'll come to me in a second. But anyway, they have guys that can match up with those long wings. The issue is, Who are you putting on Shea? SGA is just, he gets to the free throw line. Whoever you put on him, he's going to get him in foul trouble. That's the other thing you have to factor in. So what I think you see happen is what we've seen in a lot of games before. Like when Kawhi would play against LeBron, every once in a while you'd see Kawhi take him on for four quarters, but they don't want to wear him out. You would see what they would do is Kawhi would play off, play help defense, and then in the fourth quarter, then they'd put him on the best player.
Yeah.
And I think you might see that to a degree with Shea. But just have to wait and see. But I think OKC wins the series.
Yeah, me too. But looking at the lines, it's interesting. OKC is, by the way, is minus is 7.5. Mm-hmm. Knicks 4.5.
Okay, so you got 4.5. All right.
Yeah. But the over-under for the Knicks Pacers is 223.5. And during the Boston series, it was down like 207 very often.
Well, so Boston, a better defensive team. Knicks, a good defensive team. This is the thing I tell people, and a very frustrating thing, and I'll get away from this, and we'll get into the other stuff coming up. The thing that really frustrates me about the NBA sometimes is if these teams met in the regular season, and I bet if we went back and look at a Pacers-Knicks game, the total was probably like 231, 233.
Right.
You just said it's 222 in the postseason.
Yeah.
By we get into a few games and we get to a game six or game seven, remember that number because we're going to be at about 212, 213. Yeah. It keeps coming down because those games get tighter and tighter. You're taking less chances. You're not doing stupid things. Coaches run more half-court sets. You do have certain coaches that want to run and force you out of what you want to, you know, your sets and everything like that. But it's weird how it happens in game sevens and everything tightens up. The oddity was game seven with the Nuggets and the Thunder. The Thunder just beat their asses so bad the game went over the total. But it's the same thought process. The Nuggets, what did they barely score 90 in that game or whatever it was in a game seven? This is the NBA in 2025. These guys, they don't play defense during the regular season. All of a sudden, playoffs start, and then they start playing defense. So
it's weird. It shows you they can.
Yeah. All right, World of Stupid. We got a bunch of things to talk about. But one of the main things I want to get into, the manhunt is still on in New Orleans where 10 escapees are on the run from a prison.
Mm-hmm.
And people are playing a really, really fun game, which I don't know if we should get into it. Maybe we should talk about it.
I can't wait to, because I got comments about the police chief down there.
Absolutely. We get into that next in the World of Stupid. All right, here we go. World of Stupid time. So let's start it off. Don't know if you guys saw the debate or whatever that was between RG3 and Ryan Clark. Basically, RG3 tweeted out a video of him talking about Angel Reese and Caitlin Clark. If you guys missed it, they played over the weekend. The weird thing about that video is people aren't seeing Angel Reese shove the big in the back before Caitlin Clark comes in and fouls her. And honestly,
Reese,
it was a basketball foul. Mm. You can call it a flagrant. I'm fine with that if you thought it was aggressive. Okay.
It was very aggressive. She hit her from behind. Are you talking about Clark's foul? Or
Clark's foul.
Reese was, that was nuts.
She shoved the girl in the back.
Hit her in the back and knocked her down.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
But it didn't get called. And I think that's why Caitlin Clark steps in and puts her ass on the free throw line. Now, I like both of them. I like both players. I do think there's obviously some weird stuff that's going on with the WNBA. But after that, RG3 said he recognizes hate when he sees it and says Angel Reese hates Caitlin Clark. Well, in comes Ryan Clark. As he starts to say something. I mean, RG3 put out this long thing. And the essence of what Ryan Clark said, or at least what people are shortening up to, is RG3 dates or is married to a white woman, so he can't comment on a black woman. Am I missing anything? Does anybody want to correct
me? Come on. I mean, this is...
For whatever you want, RG3 plays in a narrative that Reese is the villain of Clark's hero origin story. You guys can say what you want about it, but Angel Reese is playing the villain and playing it well. And the other thing that Ryan Clark said is that he doesn't consider Caitlin Clark the face of the NBA. Every one of her games has moved to a bigger venue. Stop it. You don't have to like her, but stop it. Just respect what she's done. I mean, it's incredible to see someone that's playing this way. And oh, by the way, Caitlin Clark had a triple-double in that game. But yeah, she's not the face. Ryan Clark said a lot of dumb things. There's some things that I agreed with him on. And he said, in no way tripping on any of it. Know exactly who I am, what I said, why I said it, and who I said it for. I can live with everything else. Sage Steele called him out and called it classless, divisive, gross, unnecessary.
It is gross.
But it's par for the course from Ryan Clark.
And this is what really sucks and really pisses me off in this day and age. You know,
Des Bryant defended Ryan Clark. So,
yeah, well, so.
So what, I'm just saying, there are people on both sides of this.
Look, the race card's been thrown too much, too often, you know, it's particularly in the last few years, for everything. you know, it's like if you ever get, if there's ever a decision made that's in your disfavor, it's racial. Mm-hmm. And you can't do that because if, what it does is, and this is like why, you know, when people make fake rape allegations, I get very upset because I had a family member forcibly raped in her own home when I was a kid. Mm-hmm. It really bad.
Your aunt, right?
Yeah, my aunt was beaten and raped in her house. And, it, you know, it broke my heart. And to hear people make these phony ass rape allegations when they have like buyer's remorse, you know, 23 years later, don't tell me you were so traumatized. Nonsense. You weren't beaten and forcibly raped. You went to bed with somebody very often, willingly, and now you're jumping on it. And this is what's happened in many occasions. And it's the same thing with the race card. There's so much, discrimination still exists. It existed horribly. I grew up, I mean, I'm older than anyone in this show, as we know. You remind me every day. When I was a kid,
you there used
was
still, to walk to work.
There was separate water fountains still. Think about it. It still existed in the early 60s. I was a toddler, but I mean, it still existed. So it's not like it's that long ago. So yeah, it's a horrible thing. But when you do this every time and you have stupid comments like this, you discredit these guys who paved the path to improve the way things are, like now, when things are not that way and things are much better. And you discredit like Martin Luther King and, you know, and Malcolm X and people like this who really paved the way for all this and took great risk where they were both assassinated. Like, think about this. Two of my heroes, and people can find they find it hard to comprehend Malcolm X. Malcolm X is one of my heroes. The guy was smart. He was courageous. He saw through the BS in 1964. He actually told people, then, you don't need to fear the white conservative. It's the white liberal you need to fear. Basically, because it's a hand that's just keeping you down, and it's a bearded racism. Listen to his speech. The guy was brilliant. And it's just, and he, when guys like this say stupid, ugly things like this, and Sage said it best, it's gross, you discredit everything they've done.
He can't make a comment because he's married to a white woman.
Yeah, right. Anyway. And how is that not divisive?
It's just silly. All right, manhunt is still on in New Orleans. They over the weekend, they kind of failed to catch a single additional escaped prisoner after the first three. They got 7 of 10. The one guy that they caught fell asleep on a park bench. He had nowhere else to go. And then they come up and they start kicking his foot like, Hey, buddy, time to go back to jail. But what the internet has done is turned this into a game where guys said, here are the mugshots of the New Orleans jail escapees. The FBI has joined the pursuit. Pick your fighter, I guess. Which guy lasts the longest? People are getting groups together to bet on who is the last guy to get caught. And one of the guys like, man, you guys can keep picking who you want. Give me Derek. Derek's the one that's going to. Derek Groves, Leo Tate, Antoine Massey, all these guys. But with escaped inmates, does this become priority number one when something like this happens? Or is it like kind of like Tommy Jones in The Fugitive? I want you to check every outhouse, doghouse. You know, he's just. Yes. Is that what happens?
Absolutely, that's what happens. And that's exactly what happens. They'll check every home, trunks of cars. There'll be people with mirrors out there looking. They'll have dogs everywhere because you have to. I mean, I found guys in kitchen cabinets, couch cushions, laundry bags. I'm not joking. Like, I found a guy in a convertible couch once. I found a guy lying in, like, cabinets in the kitchen. I found a guy in a laundry bag. After the SWAT team said it was clear, we poked the bag and he jumped out and ended up getting shot. So, I mean, yes, this is what goes on.
Did you see the hole they cut in the wall?
No.
This is what they escaped.
I still can't believe that's the way they did it.
Well, it looked like they were in a room of, that looks like drywall, right? Is that concrete that they
took? It's covered now, but yeah. Hold on. But yeah, where is it?
You son of a. What happened? All right, let me flip this around. That's not going to work for radio, right, Joe? Here. Jeez. Here it is, Ed. Why don't you move again?
Oh, wow.
Yeah, they cut a, like, and then they just.
That is drywall.
Yeah. Sorry for the fat guys. You're not escaping today. it's a little box. Almost look like a, you know, if you, a payphone. Yeah. You know, if you think about how big a payphone was back in the day. Wow. For you young kids, that we used to put a quarter in there. Hell, when Ed was young, they used to put a nickel, or he would call the operator. Hello, operator. And then they would patch you through to Ed. Is that right?
Yeah. That's what happened. One ringy dingy. Yes, that's what happened. Yeah.
Well, yeah, your world's stupid. All right.
But you know, did you see the police chief in New Orleans?
Well, go ahead. You wanted to say something about him.
Her?
Oh. Oh, no. I know who that, because she's the one that, what happened earlier this year? Or was it the incident with an NFL player? where she spoke and said something like really, really stupid down there? Am I off base in that? Or does it sound like...
I don't know. I
mean, something happened and she spoke at a... Because we did it in the World of Stupid. One of her press conferences, and she said something really, really dumb.
Yeah, that's her.
Yeah.
That's her. Yeah.
Yeah, that's her.
How do you feel about her?
Yeah. She looks like an old lady who I don't know who's going to inspire any conference. It's just, and I'm saying this, and I don't care what people think. This matters. And her talking about these escaped inmates who were dangerous people, she came across like a librarian warning people to bring back their overdue books. It's like, give me a Florida sheriff anytime. It's like, this is ridiculous. I mean, this whole kinder, gentler, like, approach to this very dangerous occupation, it's just unbelievable. Like,
well, yeah, I mean, look, and by the way, I had somebody that sent me a message saying that's not what RG3 said. Told me to check Rita's page, and she had to come back for it. So, and then I got some comments on this real quick. Black men like RG3 who make being with white women their entire personality, fetishizing their whiteness and actively denigrating black women, do irreparable damage in our community. Ryan Clark's comments about RG3 might not be for you as a white guy to understand. That may be 100% fair, too. But at the same extent, too, because I agree with the RG3 stuff. It's just, it's so amazing with him. First off, he's so corny that I find him unlikable.
Mm-hmm.
That's how it is. But if this was the case and what they're talking about, yeah, I can't speak to that. But we all know there's this big thing. I wish Rob was here to talk about this and maybe give a different side of it. But this is what we have this week. So appreciate you guys, you know, kind of getting in. We got to step out because I have another segment to do. The Daily Line's coming up next. Had a terrible day yesterday. Went 1-4. The only thing I hit in my top plays was a prop bet. I did give out some plays that were in my top plays in the morning that won that weren't in my top plays at night, if you get what I'm saying. Like, found some other plays that I really like. But here's what we're going to do. I'll give you the plays for today. There's a couple spots that are just amazing for hitters. Love the NBA. Love the NHL. Love a WNBA play. That's right. I'll give you all of it when we come.
Hi, everybody. It's Brian Green from the Commercial Break Podcast. It's likely you've heard of the show if you're directly related to me or you follow our MySpace page. But I'm not here to talk to those three listeners. I'm here to appeal to people who haven't heard the show. Along with my co-host, Kristen Joy Hoadley, we're taking a deeper look at the topics that are affecting our youth today. Like, who are the people who are dating ghosts? Where did all these pickup artists come from? And why doesn't my preacher have a nicer private jet? We understand that these are the issues you really want to get to the bottom of. The Commercial Break is now available on the Odyssey app or wherever you find your podcasts.
Back. All right, guys, we're going to make this quick as I run through everything for this evening. Some great weather spots, some interesting hitting spots. As I've said, we're going to get to that point where we look at the Athletic Stadium and the Rays Stadium and see what's going on. I wrote it yesterday, even though it didn't come to fruition. We didn't hit the over in the, that was my top play in the Rays game. I did have Yandy Diaz over 1.5 total bases. That hit. He led off with a single, and I think in his next at bat or the bat after that, he had a double. But yeah, the rest of the plays for me in the top five just didn't go my way, whether it was losing a close game. I had the Orioles, loved them yesterday. It feels ugly to say that you love them with how they've been playing. I just thought it was a really good spot for them. They had the better pitcher. It doesn't matter. it just doesn't. Like, you're watching, you're looking at it today, and I want to take the Orioles again today. It's a pick 'em. I think I'm going to, but it makes me sick. It's a pick 'em, and 75% of the money's coming in on the Brewers. I always fade those spots, but they've played so bad, I totally understand why everybody's betting against them. People love streaks. They love to jump on losing streaks and winning streaks, and I'm the guy that's always trying to go the opposite way on those streaks at times, but it's hard to find the right spot because you don't know how long they're going to go. It's just that the odds go in a certain direction where it's too valuable for me to pass it up, especially in baseball sometimes, but... Here we go. Let's go over today. In the NBA, I love Oklahoma City -7.5 tonight. I think the under is a good play in that game, too. I'm wondering, in that game also, I should say, I'm wondering if we do see something where the game gets slowed down quite a bit. I'm wondering what like the total is going to look like from game one to game two. We'll see tonight, but I think OKC handles business. In the NHL, thought I'd be on an under, but everybody's on the under. Give me Florida and Carolina to go over 5.5. I think this should be a defensive matchup, but... I can't look at that type of money coming in on it and not play the over. I'm sorry. That's the contrarian in me. I can't get away. What do you see with this, Ed, real quick?
With the NHL game?
Mm-hmm.
Same. I think you've got two teams that, brother, both have great goaltending. Florida's been very physical. A little bullying, and they got to where they are, and that's fine. That's their game. And Carolina has got a smothering defense. I mean, that's what happened to the Caps. They couldn't do anything. And the first, early in the season, it was like early in the playoffs when they played the early part of the playoff series against the Capitals. I saw the Hurricanes being tentative, not taking shots on the power play, just not being themselves. And then when they started playing the way they played all season, they dominated the series, basically. Because the Caps couldn't do anything against them. And they did it to the Rangers, too. Like, seeing the Hurricanes, when I watched the Rangers play the Canes, they're all over you. They don't let you breathe. And when you have that, it's like it's really tough, you know, to set up a scoring chance. So, I see it's going to be as a low-scoring game.
And that's what everybody – so I'm going with the over. And that's where it's like, oh. I mean, everything tells me to take the under. And you're going, well, why are you going to take the over? Because everybody's saying the same damn thing about this game. So I'm fading it. In the WNBA, we just talked about Caitlin Clark. They're playing the Atlanta Dream, the Indiana Fever are. The Atlanta Dream, whew, they stink. They stink on ice, man. The total is 174.5. I can't get away from this over. I mean, you're going to look at it. People think the number's too high this early in the season. I don't know how much you guys have watched Caitlin Clark and the Indiana Fever play last year. They shoot a ton. They run and gun. They're not great defensively, so I think Atlanta will score. Give me the over there, and I like it a lot.
A lot.
MLB weather today. Red Sox under is the best spot. White Sox under, Cards over, and Colorado over. A lot of times when you see a Colorado over, that means the weather's good for hitters there. Everybody always takes the overs and Coors unless it gets to like 11 or 12, and people go, that's... that's too much. There's no such thing as too much in Coors with how big that ballpark is. But I'm not touching the over tonight, even though it is a relatively decent spot. Now, for baseball, I like Seattle and Chicago. That's the White Sox to go under 8. I do like that Boston Mets game to go under 9. As I said earlier, I like the Orioles. I like the LA Angels and the Athletics to go over 10. I think that's going to be the highest scoring game on the slate today. Unless Houston and Tampa Bay can get going. Tampa Bay can't hit to save their damn lives, man. They're so bad at the plate, and they're in such a great hitting situation tonight, not only because of the pitching matchup, but because of the small stadium. And what's it like in Florida, Ed? It's warm. It's very effing warm. It's only going to get hotter there.
It's uncomfortable. Uncomfortably warm already.
And when you watch that game early and you saw the home run and it was 3-0, you're going, okay. You probably said, I see what he sees. And then they put up all those zeros.
Yeah,
so.
It's like, you know, my house is not in South Florida, in Miami. It's in right where the Rays play. It's in that area, Tampa Bay area. It's been hot.
Well, here's my top five for now, and I'll we'll get out after this. Houston, Tampa Bay over 9.5. LA Angels and Athletics over 10. Yeah, those are two high totals, and I like both. I do like the Orioles tonight. I don't know if I'm going to make it a top play or not, but Boston and the Mets under 9 will be. Give me Oklahoma City minus the 7.5, and the Dream and Fever, it's a fever dream, 174.5 go over that total. So there you go.
All right.
That's it. We're going to talk to Jim Duquette next. We'll get his thoughts on front office. What do the Orioles have to do? Jim's been there, so we'll get his take on everything. Does he feel like Elias needs to make some even more changes? Does Elias need to be changed? We'll talk about that with Jim Duquette coming up next.
Hi, everybody. It's Brian Greene from the Commercial Break Podcast. It's likely you've heard of the show if you're directly related to me or you follow our MySpace page. But I'm not here to talk to those three listeners. I'm here to appeal to people who haven't heard the show. Along with my co-host, Kristen Joy Hoadley, we're taking a deeper look at the topics that are affecting our youth today. Like, who are the people who are dating ghosts? Where did all these pickup artists come from? And why doesn't my preacher have a nicer private jet? We understand that these are the issues you really want to get to the bottom of. The Commercial Break is now available on the Odyssey app or wherever you find your podcasts.